the legal department, they review it with recommendation. And all SLAs are signed by the DDGs on my behalf. For a specific program, I make sure that so that they can monitor themselves. Otherwise, it means I must monitor every single SLA. So I've got a very systematic way, and each one has to get that authority. It's not automatic that they get it. So it's a system. But there are safeguards, honorable members, with regard to NGOs. Normally, by the end of the financial year, they've got funding retained. That becomes like a rollover, and we've been querying that also to say that we still want them to write us to say they've got so much remaining, because then it doesn't affect their cash flow, and CFO will explain that. The second one about the treasury, and Chair, you raised that. I wish we had an opportunity to present to you. If you recall, Chair, we presented before yourself and the Appropriations Committee, just making a statement that health is underfunded. There are actually only two provinces. The threshold is supposed to be 30%, and there are only two provinces that are at that threshold. It's Western Cape and Mpumalanga. It's Western Cape, KZN and Gauteng that are at that threshold of 30%. But even those provinces, and I want to use Gauteng and KZN as examples, Chair, and what Honorable Fish raised earlier. What happens when the provinces work on their budget? By the end of the financial year, they're already on the negative. So what the provincial treasuries do, when they allocate for them, they already remove all those accrual, meaning it's less the money on accrual. So they start from a very, very low baseline. So it's a big concern for us. The second, Chair, the issue of post, we've made it very clear, we've been emphatic actually, that you, with health, there can never be a health service without health workers. There are four things, Chair. If you don't have them, you don't have a health system. If you don't have health workers, if you don't have medicines, if you don't have radiological services, if you don't have lab services, those four. Even if you can run a service from, you know, a facility that is, does not look fancy, but those four things must be in place. So I agree, it's a key concern. We've expressed this formally with Treasury. And we'll share an experience about KZN. And let me say perhaps we probably need to discuss our desire to have good audit outcomes and our desire for service delivery and a balance between the two. Let me share with you what I mean. If you look at what is expected regarding the vacancy rates, we must have low vacancy rates, okay? But if you go to what KZN did to try and balance the requirement to have low vacancy rates, but also to meet the requirements for a low baseline in terms of budget, every time KZN had a vacant post, they froze it, and after that abolished. On the books, they look good, because it shows that they don't have vacancy. But on the ground, they actually don't have people. When we went to meet with the colleagues and we visited hospitals, it resonated across every single facility we went to. The doctors are saying, you know, in the past, we could work under a dilapidated building, but we'll still look after our patients. Today we can't, because they've taken the very little that we had. We don't have people. In fact, Chair, if you recall, I even used the expression when I last spoke before this committee, that KZN, because of this, is not only at ICU, it is actually in ICU, it's in ICU without ventilators. And it was my description because they do not have staff, and it's a reality. So it's probably something that both the appropriations committee, because we did present, we did tell you what the threshold should be, and that we have serious concerns. Security in Civitas, I think Ms. Rennie will respond to that. Concerns about a screening. Honorable members, this is what I raised earlier. Honorable Ndaba had not come in.
Oh.
Yes, I explained that. In fact, we screened 3 million, we've got 500,000. Where we are now, Treasury must agree, because we don't believe that the grant is an approach that will help us to render services. We would like a temporary vehicle that is almost like an NHI fund created for that purpose, and we pay for these services in that regard. So this is the vehicle, and maybe the CFO will update the committee on where we are with that, because they had a meeting yesterday. With regard to governance, the clinic committees, and whether they should have a stipend or not, I think from the work that Ms. Hunt has been doing, she will report, because it comes up repeatedly. And in some of the meetings we attended with in consultation, the issue that was raised was that, you know, people who attend board meetings, they get stipends. Why don't we? I think it's that kind of conversation that we should have. So maybe Ms. Hunter will just also share with you what is it that we are seeing. On CCOD, Dr. Pillay will respond. We are just saying CCOD does not get transfer funding like we do. In fact, they collect revenue for compensation of those who have had lung-related diseases. But Dr. Pillay will just explain that process. With regard to Honorable James, with regard to the patient experience, thank you for the comments, and also on traditional medicine. The understanding on the revite, yes, it is a concern, and maybe the CFO will explain. And in some way, I'll also respond to Honorable Masalela's question. You see, if you do a Godaddy target, I think we'll just be doing it for reporting purposes. Remember, you have to deal with the following: value for money, but also economies of scale. If you know that you are going to revitalize 100 clinics, and you are going to do the same thing, so why do you want to buy things per facility and not achieve economies of scale? And what value adds? Because it will be more costly to follow that kind of approach. Let me use an example. What we do, we've actually identified teams that must go and fix things in clinics. They get their project timelines determined in conjunction with provinces. They have to start at a particular time. But if a province is not ready, they have to communicate back. So what we do, we have teams that also go to provinces to establish their level of readiness. Let's say you decide you are going to fix lifts. You can't just contract one provider for one lift and then go one provider for one lift. It is just not cost effective and it's not efficient. So we can share that with you and show how it works, and then you'll then tell us whether, you know, that's why we put it as an annual target, because they move together. In fact, Chair, Eastern Cape alone, Ian, they finished how many? 8 clinics?
Yeah.
8 clinics are ready to be opened all at once. So it's those clinics that are opened all at once, we can give you a list, and it's those that have been refurbished. So they are moving in that systematic way. When they refurbish a group per province. So we report in that way. But if you say we should do it individually, and it's not sustainable.
Sorry.
No, can we correct that? We're not saying report individually. If you are going to refurbish 100 clinics, per quarter, what are you doing in those 100 clinics? That's what we want to understand. That's what we mean. We don't say, no, if you have, we are doing 100 clinics, no, tell us what you're going to be doing in one clinic, and then another clinic, in another clinic. Tell us per quarter what is it that you'll be doing in these 100 in a clinic. That will result and result. Each result and result will be an annual target of the repair of that particular clinic or of those 100 facilities.
Okay.
So that when I go to my area in the list of those clinics, she goes into an area, he will be able to understand what the partner said they are going to be doing this, they are doing it. That's what we are saying. We don't say go hamba kancane, facility for facility. That's not what we mean.
Okay.
It's only that he also spoke without being identified. In that, please, but I don't want this to fall in between cracks. The issue of bambisanane, I think we really need now. Because it's almost a year or two that we were there, and we don't know what is there. No, Honorable, what? Maybe I'm the one who must take the blame. I'm not going to allow when they are giving a report for us to interject. When then the team is done, you will come in. My apologies.
Okay, Chair, again, and I apologize, Honorable. And maybe it's because the first time there was a joint sitting of the portfolio committee and NCOP, you asked for the report, and in those reports we gave detailed information, precisely what is requested. He Honorable Fee said he didn't get the report. We resent again, and I just verified it was sent. Now, the question is, when we send documents, how do then eventually reach members? But again, Chair, we'll send for the third time. In the report, we actually give details. We'll tell you which facility, where we are with the facility. We link it to the budget. We link it to the timelines. It is detailed. Now, in terms of this reporting frame, we will not tell you because for each province, they're at different stages, and for each province, we'll show you exactly what happened. We will distribute the report. In fact, give you even an updated. We will also check, give you, in addition, the inspections that we conduct. So I will ask that before the end of day today, you get them electronically. Like I said, we send them before. We send them twice, actually, because Honorable Makalela had raised it. And why I was raising it, and why I put it this way, is because we systematically do it that way. And even in this report, you will not, in a PowerPoint, get it in that way because we present it in a far more detailed format. And it is very systematic, Chair. With regard to the blood alcohol and toxicology, the proposal is that we await the pilot that has been done in the Western Cape. And then based on the pilot, we will then sign the MOU with the Department of Transport, because they are supposed to help us with this activity. Ideal Clinic, indeed, it must be a reality, and Ms. Hunter will respond. The number of provinces, the issue about the qualification check, actually we have, secondly, a detail. What we've done, the former Auditor General, Nombembe, Chair, he's now the head of SAICA. SAICA is the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. What we did, he actually came to us and said he would like to help us improve audit outcomes. Now, this is the former Auditor General. So we worked with him to develop plans with specific provinces. Now, it's not all provinces who took up the offer, but at least those who took up the offer, Free State, Eastern Cape, Gauteng have unqualified audits. They are the ones with unqualified audits. We can show you exactly what we did. Now, if you want us to show you that we signed agreements with SAICA, we'll do so, Jay. But that ongoing work, it's also a very rigorous process. That's the first thing. The second thing, we have what we call provincial support teams. There's a chief director called Hadi. He's in provinces all the time, Chair. He spends his whole time, and I said it the last time, about the support we do. He is the one who does an analysis. He sits with provinces, and we have that multi-party team that I referred to, and said it's not multi-party in a political sense, because it's a provincial rep. It's from Treasury, from Health, from National Treasury, and from National Health, meaning we've got all these partners meeting, sitting, looking at budgets. So our support, if you want to, we've got a much detailed report about that, and it will not be adequate to just do it this way. But I think we're showing you the outcome. The final audit outcome, you cannot report it before the end of the financial year. So by now, when you ask us, we will tell you that this is what we've achieved so far. We can work backwards and show you. But now, for every province, for instance, Mpumalanga was this close to achieving, to achieving an unqualified audit. And we are confident that in the next financial year, it's one of those that we are confident about. Limpopo, for instance, we can tell you exactly what the problem is in Limpopo. We are actually disappointed because they not only regressed, they've actually gone backwards significantly. Northwest was our shining star for a number of years. They have slipped, but they'll come back. I think we'll probably struggle with two provinces in the next financial year, and we know why. It's Northern Cape and Limpopo. The rest were on track. Gauteng were debating, Chair. We're debating because Gauteng is obviously underfunded, as you know. And the underfunding, even though it's a threshold of 30%, is this issue of Gauteng looking after foreigners. You probably saw the Premier statement that he's going to write ambassadors and high commissioners that they must pay for their citizens. It's also provinces that use services in Gauteng for which they would like to have payment. So it's a very complex and ongoing problem that we will try to address with the province. The CFO is, I guess, competent to comment on the accruals, and he'll respond to that. The provincial plans, we develop the plans, but the Treasury issues allocation letters well in advance. Now, we have no power whatsoever, Chair, in the issuing of allocation letters to provinces. Even with the allocation letters, the provincial executive is the one that decides where they're going to fund and how they're going to fund. It doesn't matter, Chair, what we say. I, Chair, with my counterpart in Treasury, A 10 by 10, it's a meeting of Treasury, National Treasury, a Health National, and our provincial counterparts, Treasury and Health. Here in those meetings, we discuss accruals, we discuss allocation, we go to detail, but it doesn't change anything, Chair, with what provinces allocate. For as long as the provincial executives do not consider health a priority, it doesn't matter what noise we make at national. It doesn't matter. It's a reality. And Chair, we can show you the figures. We can show you data. We can show you the example in KZN. We can show you the example in Gauteng. Gauteng, the MEC made it very clear. They will not have money for services. It's not only HR, it's services. But as national, the only amount of money we can account for is grants. That's all. But the bulk of the budget that matters is allocated and is determined by the provincial executive. And I think it's, Honorable Makalela, it's where the issues should be raised and it's where the issues should be taken up. We have no power, we have no influence over that. But what we do the analysis, we share the information, and we can share the same with you, honorable members, and show you the kind of background and homework we do to assist provinces. But it's just an exercise for us. It doesn't matter. We help, but, you know, it's disregarded. Check on the quarterly financial performance of the province. In fact, the CFO Forum, Mr. Hadley, with the provincial support team, they do that. They do that religiously, not only on quarterly basis, on monthly basis. And he will tell you that when you see red, the minister picks up a phone and talks to the MEC. And I think this afternoon he'll also share the same with you. The targets about annual, and again, Ms. Rain, if possible, can you get those reports again? Because they are detailed and they give this information that Honorable Makalela is requesting. A measurement of the oversight visit and quarterly target. The quarterly target, there are certain things that perhaps, if you allow us, we'll talk about milestones, but they can only but remain a target because you can never conclude them in less than a year. And I think perhaps for those, we will write what the milestones are, and I'll talk to COO to do exactly that. The positive 72, Anban Pile will respond to that, the CCMG figures, and the ward-based primary healthcare outreach teams with regard to the problems that we face. There are three levels that I would like to respond to this question. The first one is about the policy. The policy chair has been almost finalized. We are waiting for National Health Council to approve. There was only one problem that was holding back the policy on community health workers. And that policy chair is about what they should be paid, because that varied from one province to the other. Some provinces pay them 900 rands, others 2,500, some were not paying them, and so on. So we came up with policy. We consulted labor. In fact, all labor formations. And the outcome and the response was that one labor organization or federation said they must be paid at level one. Another said at level four. Civil society said they are happy with minimum wage. So we've had these different responses. But what is of concern, of course, Chair, is that we don't just talk to community health workers. You talk to them and about them in relation to what nurses do. When we engage nurses, they said if you put them at level four, you must tell us what is it that you are going to pay an assistant nurse. It cannot be. This is what the nurses are saying. It cannot be that you pay a community health worker more than what an assistant nurse earns because they've been trained. So we've done all of that work and we've concluded all of those consultations. And Chair, at this stage, it will be NHC that will pronounce what the appropriate level of reimbursement of community health workers will be. But the policy has been finalized. With regard to problems in the provinces, in Gauteng, actually, we had a task team that was led at national by Ms. Rainey and the Premier's office. And we met with all those who were protesting. We came up with a proposal on how the problems could be resolved, particularly with a smart person, Gauteng. And then we had a list, I think there were about 9,000 of them. And Ms. Rennie will explain the detail on how this was. But the problem has been resolved in Gauteng. In Northwest, we also sent Ms. Rennie. It was also solved. So every time we sit with the province, we go through and call in the stakeholders and engage them directly. And we've done that particularly for these. On governance structures, Ms. Hunter will respond with regard to whether the clinics are functional or not. On the incidence, the malaria incidence, 0.2 per thousand, 0.1 per thousand. 0.1 per thousand means we've done better, actually. Our target was 0.2. It's 0.1 because it has dropped. It has to go down. And the COO will also respond. 83 million outstanding, CFO will respond, as well as on the underperforming provinces, particularly those that were mentioned, Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng Province, KZN, and Mpumalanga, and the concern that we may not even be able to reach the target. With respect to the Honorable Masilela on the Lisbon Civitas, Ms. Rennie will respond. It's an ongoing fight between ourselves and Department of Public Works. In a sense that we the lease is actually with Department of Public Works. But as you may recall, honorable members, this is a facility that was renovated. It wasn't built anew. And it is a concern to us. And Ms. Rennie will give you a list of problems repeatedly. This don't work. We had to start from scratch to install new lifts altogether on a building that was newly renovated. I mean, we moved in 2010, but as of about 2 years ago, we had already started with the installation of new lifts. I've already responded to the recruitment of staff and the concerns that were raised earlier by all three of the honorable members. The NHI grant, that it was for innovation, yes, it was an honorable member. The CCMDD work that we did that as part of the pilot. And what we're busy with is we're going to just scale that up. We've got 1.5 million people. We have to go beyond those numbers. I'm citing CCMDD, but there are a few other innovative areas where we'd like to scale up. The supply of condoms and femidoms and the sanitary towels, I'll ask the COO to respond. An update on the rollout of Ideal Clinic, Ms. Hunter will respond. The training of medical students and registrars in particular, it's a big problem, honorable members. The minister will indicate that when we looked at specialist training initially, based on the report that the College of Medicine had produced, they had already indicated that we're running into problems. Remember, for any registrar, any specialist to be trained, there must be a registrar post created by a province. If they don't create a registrar post, it means no training in that particular specialty. It is not sustainable. So what we did, Chair, we commissioned work as National Health Council, Tech Council, Technical NHC. Now the outcome was that if you look at the way tertiary services are organized in the country, it is not cost effective. So we reorganized these services into T1, T2, T3 in terms of the types of specialties and how they can be accessed by communities. But based on this, we also said you cannot look at tertiary services without looking at the development and training of human resources in the country. They two go together. It is for that reason, Chair, that we built all of that into the National Health Insurance Plan. Now, two of the structures that we announced, that they have to be established as a matter of agency are for that reason. One is the one on tertiary services. The second one, Chair, is on training and development. Why we're doing both is because, one, if you look at the training and development, you can't every time Cuban students come back, you have to be negotiating individually with universities. You can't check every year that medical students, nurses, and other allied health professionals finish. You have to start negotiating with provinces for them to create posts for community service and internship. It's an ongoing thing. You need a much more sustainable structure. So we've done that work. So we have to start the implementation. We don't even have to wait. When the Cuban students come back, because they're coming back in big numbers next year, we should have prepared ground, and these committees are needed for that purpose. The testing of salt in food, I'll ask Dr. Pile to respond to that. Oh, Ms. Hunter, I'm sorry. And the improvement of EMS training as well. Honorable Ngonzo, the provincial department with unqualified audit, like I said, the new entrant is Free State. Eastern Cape was last year. They've retained that. Gauteng was last year. They've retained that. The ones that have regressed is it's Northwest and Limpopo, but the one that has consistently maintained their status is Western Cape. So this is why I'm saying the ones that are worrisome is Northern Cape and Limpopo. Those really, really worry us, and hopefully we'll be able to, if they can just sign the agreement, SAICA, Northern Cape has signed now, eventually. We hope with this signature we'll be able to achieve more. The provincial APPs, yes, we'll share the draft with honorable members. And perhaps also share the allocation letter so that we share the plans. And you see by the time the allocation letter is released, that it actually doesn't even talk to the plans. Why? Because it doesn't matter what the province has written. When the treasury allocation letter comes out, it's just issued, irrespective. The litigation legal costs for the national department, I'll refer to Ms. Rennie, but the provincial one, I think it's much broader than this, and Ms. Rennie will also respond about what is it that we're doing. The function of CCOD, Dr. Pillay will respond, but facilities that did not reach the target, yes, it's an acknowledgement on our part, it's underperformance. We will increase in this quarter and the next quarter. Chair, with regard to audit and the work in Ideal Clinic, Ms. Hunter will respond, but also infrastructure and the clinic, Bambisanani, she will also respond. Skilling of clinic committees and hospital boards, there's also a proposal that would like to include in this process of transformation that we are busy with. Revenue generation and retention, Dr. Pillay will respond. And like I said, for COP, we are just as unhappy. You cannot run health without these four things. I'll hand over to CFO.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just deal with a few things. The first one is the potential NHI funding vehicles, especially on the interim fund. So as DJ said, we had a session, our first session yesterday with our Treasury. Essentially, there's four vehicles for the interim. It's a program, you know, a program within the department will be the one. The second would be to develop a trading entity or a trading account. Thirdly, as a government component, and fourthly, as a Schedule 3A public entity. And I think for the interim, we might be leading towards the program approach, but we will still have to interrogate all four of these funding vehicles. It's a pity that our APP only talks to the outcomes by you know, provincial audit outcomes. In fact, as DJ explained, we've done quite a bit on provincial support, and we've been able to analyze many budgets, many non-negotiables, etc., and we can make it available. It's quite a comprehensive report. On the accruals, it's a bit of a catch-22 in the sense that if we look at our analysis, we find that provinces are really underfunded. So the argument or the issue that whatever you save should be an accrual or vice versa gets a little bit difficult in those circumstances where your budget initially is under pressure. And from the audited financials, we've seen quite a steep increase in accruals, especially in Gauteng, and it comes from the financials. So we try to work with provinces in terms of improving the budget allocations by provincial treasuries, and we've made the case, especially on the provincial equitable share, etc. But as DJ said, the Excos have the final decision in what gets allocated to provinces. The HPV vaccines, 83 million, those are commitments. We've identified those commitments within the system, within the provincial departments of health. So what happens is provincial departments have to claim expenditure back from the National Department of Health, and we then deal with those invoices or those claims as we get them. We understood from interactions that there is 83 million that provinces still have to claim back from the National Department. And we normally try to at least finalize those before year end. If I'm not mistaken, we haven't carried any accruals on HPV vaccines since last year, so we basically year on year we settle the matter. The underperformance of provinces on Revite, again, it's something that's been there for very long. We get explanations that implementing agents are not dealing with the allocations properly, that they're still in supply, in advertising or in construction phase and so on. But I think what we've decided at National is that we take a view on it on an annual basis during adjustment stage. As it stands now, the allocations by province will change exactly to reflect the expenditure trends. We also have an option of withholding the funds until we get proper plans in terms of the DORA. And all of those aspects are being considered. Pumalanga at 4%, I agree, is extremely low. It shouldn't be the case. I know they've moved quite a bit of money into goods and services, for instance, which might also affect the Revite grant expenditure. And then just to close off, yes, the departments that or the provinces that have unqualified as Western Cape, Free State, ourselves, but the ones that we think can come into the next financial year definitely is Mpumalanga and KZN. Mpumalanga actually had one issue on immovable assets that was close to being resolved. KZN, same with them, they've actually reduced quite a bit of the emphasis, the methods of emphasis, and they've got one or two issues on qualification. But yeah, I think we can also include a slide next time just to show you the movement on qualification matters and matters of emphasis. So they've actually come down quite a bit, and I must say the psych intervention is helping us. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, DG. I will start with the elimination of malaria, where our target is it's an annual target of keeping our malaria cases not more than 0.2 malaria cases per 1,000 population at risk. That's on page 28, slide 28. So our quarter one target was 0.02 malaria cases per 1,000 population at risk. And what we achieved for the quarter was only 0.1 cases. That means we've done well because you want to keep your malaria cases low. So it's kind of like a positive deviation. Then just to also explain to Honorable Masalela the page 9 target, where the annual target is 3,300 facilities, and for quarter one, the target was to have 3,200 facilities reporting availability of stock.
So what we actually achieved was more than the target. We achieved 3,272 facilities. That's on slide 9. So we therefore exceeded again our target by 72 health facilities instead of, you know, who reported. So 72 facilities over and above the target reported. And out of those 72, 3,081 were primary health care facilities and 191 were hospitals, which gives you then the 3,272, honorable member. I don't know if that's maybe clear. So that's how we write our targets. We write what's the annual target and what they had set themselves for the quarter, where they can set quarterly targets. And then, as DG said, going forward, we do collect all our branches have, if it's not in year, if it's an annual target, they have operational plans with quarterly milestones outlined. And we do monitor from our monitoring unit. But it's been customary not to report the annual targets, but we will do so now, as DG said she will request me to do. That's on the targets. Then I will also like to give an update on the issue, honorable member, that you mentioned about the fact that we supply condoms, both male and female. Yes, we do supply condoms, and the Max condoms are cheaper, although they flavorful and they kind of seem to be favored by the youth especially. With regards to the sanitary towels, yes, we are very involved in the work on ensuring that young girls, especially in quintile 1, 2, 3, and 4 schools, will be able to access in a structured way, but also other girls in other schools, sanitary towels. Now, this whole development of the policy on sanitary dignity is being driven by the Department of Women, and they had a task team on which someone from the health department sat, someone from social development. It's an interdepartmental task team. And I'm really proud to say that that policy has now, it's going through the process towards approval by cabinet, and it's gone through the social cluster technical working group, and then it will be serving on the 27th of this month at the DG cluster for cabinet later, I think in the year or in October. And so, yes, there is constructive work together. They have also costed it, and they're working on a detailed implementation plan. And the ultimate aim, as the DG Women said, is to ensure that this can be freely available, as we do with condoms. Another honorable member also raised the issue of, it was you, honorable member, about what progress are we making with emergency services. Now, we have we're making quite significant progress with our NICET policy, that is the National Emergency Care Education and Training Policy, where we have implemented the 2-year and 4-year training program for those categories of emergency services workers. It's only the basic ambulance assistance program that has not been implemented, because we first have to promulgate new regulations and align our training with the NQF, because those fell out of the new NQF. So that training will only start in 2019. And because of that, because we recently have moved to implementation, it's very difficult already to say whether there is improvement. We don't have a sense yet of whether it's helping to also improve services, especially emergency care services. So the impact of training will become evident later on. With regards to the toxicology testing and the blood testing, honorable member, we have actually made quite a lot of progress in that we're doing very well with our testing for roadside, our testing for the number of cases that we test in terms of our drunken driving. We support the target there. It's not in the APP, but in terms of the milestones, we've checked that. But with regards to the target that is in the APP, the MOU for roadside testing. So we needed to sign an MOU with various departments that are involved. But there's a criminal justice committee that recommended that we hold on with that MOU between all of us, the Department of Transport, etc., until the results of the pilot of the breathalyzer test. I think we have reported it before. Until that pilot's results are complete, because they're convinced that that will be a more cost-effective option for us to go. But even with our current method, we're doing well. And then with the pathology test, I've been reporting also last year, DG, that we've moved now to a more targeted approach for testing, for pathology testing, and this will be starting in Pretoria in October. Meanwhile, they have validated all the samples, they've done an audit, and they've analyzed and validated out of the 1,200 backlog, they found that some didn't have some labeling was not correct, and so 844 will be analyzed, and then the backlog will be complete. That's it from me, DG. Thank you.
Ms. Rennie, followed by Ms. Hunter.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, honorable members. The first question I will respond to is related to the security system situation in Civitas. I assume, honorable member, that this is based on previous reporting that we gave to the committee. The security of Civitas has improved largely because we have in-house security of appointed security officers. We also have security from outsourced security outside the building, because that is where we had a major problems. However, I have to report for information of the members that the new challenge that we're experiencing now is that the taxis park around the building and we don't have free access because they are forever there washing their cars and all that. We've raised the matter with the municipality because we set money aside to install bollards. They are called bollards. These cement stones that stop people from parking. Unfortunately, that project was supposed to have been done by the end of last year, financial year. It delayed because now the municipality is telling us that we have to go through another lengthy process. So that's the challenge that we have now. Yet education managed to do the same project easily without all the hiccups that we're experiencing. However, we are pushing for that implementation. While we are still on Civitas, there was a question related to, that Gigi talked about, related to the maintenance and public works. That's another matter that we reported to the committee previously. That challenge is still existing. It might be that we are at an improved performance now of public works, but the challenge is still there. We still do not have a resident facility manager from public works. So we struggle most of the time. We do as and when we do maintenance on ad hoc and by emergency procurement. And we have resorted to as and when we have to do emergency maintenance for the building, we will deduct it from the rent that we're supposed to be paying to them. But we follow due process in terms of informing them so that we avoid audit queries. So that was the first thing. Gigi wanted me to elaborate on the Gauteng community health workers matter. As Gigi says, the matter has been resolved. The challenge at that time with the labor and the affected community health workers is that they did not want to follow the process of registering into the new database to allow the Department of Health Gauteng to be able to pay their stipend. So that matter has been resolved because they eventually agreed to register. Now, the issue related to the litigations, National Health has a very small budget in terms of legal matters because we only pay for legal fees. Most of the cases that we facilitate are actually at provincial level where the minister is cited wrongly. So the challenge that the health sector is experiencing is related to the litigation, medical claims at a provincial level. And that has been projected and estimated based on the claims that are sitting on the provincial desks that are not yet either mediated or have not yet been concluded by the courts, that are well beyond 50 billion. Provinces are really having it very tough with this one. We are currently, as National Health, trying to assist KZN Health with some of their challenges, and they are projecting 30 million per month to pay for medical claims per month. The last question is related to the mass media communication that was asked by the Honourable Member under Program 4. That is a project which we embarked on as National Health to respond to some of the concerns that were raised by the Honourable Member in previous years, to say that we are not visible out there as the department. So that is the project that we put in place, and it focuses on multi-pronged communication, health promotion, and mass media, including social media, to cover all our health programs and health education. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you, DG and Honourable Chair. I just want to add to what Dr. Andrews has said about malaria, because Honourable Matasela also asked what's the difference between our quarterly target and our annual target. That is our annual target, but we have to watch it on a daily basis. So we set the same target for the quarter because we're working with a fraction, because we're working towards elimination, which means we must work towards naught and maintain it for about a year. We can't still divide that fraction in the quarters, because if we go over that 0.2 in one quarter, we will fail for the whole year. So we're setting the same quarter, the same target quarterly as the annual target, because we really want to move down to zero now. By 2019-20, that is the target that we have. As far as the clinic committees goes, yes, we have picked up, let me first answer the question, how do we check the functionality? Just as a background, we have developed the clinic, the manuals for clinic committees, the training manual, but also a pocket guide that members can walk around with in their pockets to remind them what their duties are in terms of members of the clinic. So then we do check the functionality through whether they do have meetings, whether they keep minutes, whether the minutes address the turnaround plan of the clinic. And then when we do the sample visits to clinics, we do insist that the committee members must be present, and we discuss with them to what extent they are supporting the staff to address the turnaround plans for quality improvement, because the clinic committee remains the representative of the people. And so we enforce the fact that they should be writing to the political leaders within the wards, but also to the MEC in terms of issues. So it is a process. I think we're making strides in strengthening clinic members, the clinic committee members, but there is still a road to go. So now I want to say we also picked up the problem that an issue that affects the functionality is the issue that in some provinces, well, it was two provinces that we were aware of, the Western Cape and Gauteng, they were not paying any stipends, which means there's no means for the committee members to have transport, to cover their transport costs to come there. And we've also asked that the clinic at least have petty cash to make tea for those meetings. Now, we don't have a policy at National Chair, because this resorts firmly with the provincial MEC, and it's also articulated like that in the Act and the Provincial Health Act. But what we found we needed to do in addressing this problem of no stipends in the two provinces is to come up with guidelines and we have completed the draft guidelines, which we have to take through the through to the TEC NHC and the NHC. That is on the committee. Then on the ideal clinic. Sorry, my computer went to sleep. I just wanted to read the statistics for you because you were asking. We ended the financial year on 30% of the total clinics being ideal for the country. Yes, the Western Cape joined us 1 April 2016. They ended the year with having 36 ideal clinics, which means 13% of their clinics are ideal. The province that is leading is Gauteng, with having 59% of their provinces of their facilities ideal. They are followed by KZN with 50%. So the Western Cape is the second from the bottom, with unfortunately Limpopo still lagging behind by only having 12% of their facilities ideal. So Chair, I've been making visits to the provinces, number one to look at, because remember we jumped in the first year from 0 to 9%, and then we jumped in the second year from 9 to 30%. So it was a pleasant surprise, although we would have wanted 100%. But I felt I needed to go and see if the clinics look in real life like they look on paper. So I've been visiting two well-performing clinics and two poorly performing clinics. And I've now already done three provinces, and I must say, I think the framework is understood and respected. I really haven't seen cheating. So when clinics look good on paper, they are really good. When they look bad, unfortunately, they are bad. But let me come to our progress, because we want 100%. Chair, I think we're going to stand still a little bit on 30%, because our problems that we face now is infrastructure and HR. Yes, Honorable Matlalela was talking about four-roomed houses. Sometimes we have two-roomed houses. Sometimes a clinic is being rendered in a passage. And so that is calling for infrastructure. We've been meeting with the provinces, both primary healthcare units and infrastructure, with the permission of the HODs, and in Free State especially. After the NCOP visit, the MEC and I attended the meeting chaired by Honourable Ms. Tandi Modisi when they wanted us to come and give input on what they found in the Free State. And so we're doing very specific infrastructure plans now, but if you take Free State as an example, Free State actually has enough money to quickly fix all the facilities, but the health department got a letter from the Premier to say they cannot do anything with regard to infrastructure. It is a public works in the province competency. But MEC Komphela has undertaken to solve that problem so that we can work with public works, not work with our team, but get them to assign the capacity to be able to fix the facilities and spend the money, because the money is not being spent, Chair. The sad thing is there's money to fix the clinics, but the money is not being spent. Infrastructure has told us they don't have the capacity now, but as I say, MEC Komphela had articulated that he's serious about this and he's going to address it. The HRH, we in primary healthcare have completed the WISEN. WISEN is actually giving us good news that the situation is not that bad with professional nurses, but bad when it comes to enrolled nurses and assistant nurses, who you can better use to do things like vital signs. You don't need to have the professional nurses doing vital signs. Mm. The professional nurses can then, instead of doing vital signs, consult patients and make the queue go faster. But what happens in the facility, the professional nurses clean because the clinic is dirty. The professional nurses are also data capturers because they have to report their activities at the end of the month, and they're doing vital signs. So we are, through the TEC NHC, chaired by the DG, working with the provinces, because in some provinces and districts, we also have to do a reassignment, because we are not just short, we also have areas where there's too many. And so we have started that process, because we have to work with the unions there if it's about moving people in between. So unfortunately, because it's sensitive and we don't want to mismanage it and sit with riots or unions coming to sit on Civitas stoop, as they are prone to do, we have to manage that process properly of reassigning and then In the process, also determine the actual gaps to be filled. So as the Ideal Clinic program, we actually now have to set targets for infrastructure improvement and for correcting HRH if we want the clinics to turn to the ideal. I just want to share with the committee something that I saw in Limpopo with Leboa Homo Clinic. I personally didn't think it's possible. They don't have good infrastructure. They've got a long structure that looks like it was a school once upon a time. So you go into a room and you come out into a passage and you go into a room and so on. But they are actually ideal chairs. I couldn't believe it. Because when you come there, your heart just sinks when you see this. So I went element by element and checked, and they actually comply because they've got signage, even though they wrote it themselves. They've got their medicine. They've got all their equipment in these rooms. But the reason why they can be ideal is because they have enough staff. DJ referred to it earlier when she said when we visited the hospitals, the one hospital was saying, you know, we don't have the best of infrastructure, but we always tried. But now that our staff are gone, we can't do anything. So we'll have to set the targets for the infrastructure, but set the targets for the, and see that we meet those targets for the HR. Chair, the random, oh, let, before I, Bambisani, we working on the hospital now, but haven't started with the Gateway Clinic yet. the funds haven't been assigned for the clinic, but we're looking into that, Chair. Then the random testing of the salt is just one of the measures that we applying as the health system to keep people healthy, and yes, specifically you're looking at wanting to keep people's blood pressure down so that they don't develop cardiac disease. So we are telling South Africans through health promotion to exercise, don't overdo it with alcohol, or don't drink alcohol, don't smoke, cut out sugar and take less salt. But if the manufacturers of food, like the bread, the chips, the cereals, the instant soups, keep on putting the salt it's already in the manufactured product, it's no use telling people not to, to put salt because it's already there. So what we found, this is the second year of implementation. The testing methodology that we've been using has been a little bit unstable. There's a better methodology now, but we had to change the regulations, and those regulations have been approved now, the changed one. It should be published by the Government Gazette by next week, we expect. But the Honourable Member had asked, does it have an impact? It's too soon. We will, because we're reaching all these things on the SANHANES, the South African National Health and Nutrition Survey, so that we don't duplicate or reinvent wheels. And so I think we'll be able to see with the next SANHANES if the multiple pronged intervention, because you can't just do one thing when it comes to the healthy lifestyle. We have to conform to everything if it is paying off. The chair also asked, what is our progress with mental health? We've completed the audits in the 9 provinces, and when you look at the report, it's going to be about a resource issue also. How are the provinces assigning people to the mental health program? Because as you rightly said, without people you can't do anything. And you would have seen when the DG presented, we had asked that every district must have a district specialist mental health team to build the services within the provinces. So when we analyze the results of the report, one of the things we'll also have to do is to set specific targets for the provinces and follow those up for the provinces to improve their mental health services. Chair, thank you.
I don't know whether you were the last, or it's Dr. Pele that is going to be the last. Okay. And for the part of the last one, you'll have to try to be straight to the point.
Okay. Thank you, DG, and thank you, Honourable Chair. The two areas that are still outstanding was the question relating to revenue and the other question relating to CCOD. I'll start with the question relating to revenue. So there are two provinces that have implemented revenue retention policies, the Western Cape and the Free State. The big challenge in terms of revenue collection is that if the provincial department doesn't have the incentive to collect and retain some of that revenue, the likelihood of the department actually being able to do that is limited. So the consequence of which is that many people who either would belong to a medical scheme, the Road Accident Fund, or COIDA, for example, would not be billed for the services rendered through to Road Accident Fund or the medical scheme, simply because at the provincial department there's no infrastructure for them to be able to do it. In order for them to be incentivized to do it, they would clearly have to have some revenue retention for that. So what we've done is we've been working with the FFC to persuade the provincial treasuries to allow this to happen. Provincial treasuries are very reluctant to support provincial departments to have their revenue retention because they would prefer that the funds go into the general fiscus and then be reallocated potentially, but there's no guarantee that health will get that money back. So in the case of the Western Cape and the Free State, you see very clearly when they have some revenue retention, they don't retain the entire amount. They have a target which they must achieve, and then they retain beyond that target, that they're able to retain those funds and use those funds for the infrastructure, et cetera, of their facilities. So the FFC is supporting us, and I think we're trying to persuade National Treasury and Provincial Treasuries now to do that. On the issue relating to CCOD, the CCOD is preparing its own annual report, which will have its performance targets in it. We do monitor the performance of the CCOD. So to just give you a sense, for example, in 2015-16, the CCOD only paid out 1,900 people in terms of benefits. In 2016-17, they paid 2,600. In this financial year, and this is only about 6 months, less than 6 months, they've already paid out 7,266 people. So they've cumulatively paid out double what they pay out in 2 years. That's largely because of the partnership with the mining industry, so that there are sufficient people on the medical board to evaluate the x-rays, confirm that an individual has exposure relating to work-related exposures, and that's how the compensation is done.
Well, I think we managed to get the responses in, I don't know, there's a meeting there. We managed to get the responses that we needed. Some of them, obviously, there's an information that we will be given. We had you, DG, saying that we have circulated that information to us. But we will if there's something that we'll also need, we'll put that in writing. But I just want to just put across is that we're on the ground all the time. We are phoned almost by people that we don't even know. At some point you'll ask, how did you get my number? And you forgot that you are in the website of Parliament. I'm trying to indicate the volume and the challenge that we are faced with. And therefore, at times when we do ask these questions, we ask these questions because we understand maybe you are raising something that in fact it is the system that you people agreed upon on how we must report and whatever. But as time goes on, I'm of the view that departments are supposed now to pick up that no. This committee now, it's this that we'll have need to. So it then means, DG, in your meetings in the department, in the meetings of DGs, you must then try to really look into how best you ensure that as we, because we've got different experiences in how you report on issues, you make it, you move away from a I don't know, maybe the department the usual way of reporting as maybe be prescribed at a particular time. Because it's going to make us frustrated, it's going to make you frustrated. Two, we are aware, and maybe you will have to sit down ourselves at our own time to really look into this monster. I was looking at you in the pain you are trying to put across to us on the issue of the concurrence and what is it that you can do and you cannot do. It's the same with us. Remember that we go and conduct oversight. And we don't understand why is the department not the national department. But we're raising something that I think we do know, but we must find a way on how to address this. That at the end, it is the executive in provinces that takes a decision. What then becomes our role? Vis-a-vis working together with the National Council of Provinces, because that's where provinces now are. So it's quite and you must bear with us. You must bear with us. I must not pick it up as if we're unfair. We will be unfair because ourselves, we are exposed to a number of things. We are subjected to the attitude of communities, not because some are negative, because they want to be negative, but because of the reality on the ground that we are told that patients are to go and queue as early as 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. so that they are being seen. But clinics, there are clinics that staff that says 2 o'clock cut off. How can a clinic that is supposed to close at 4 cut off seeing patients at 2 o'clock? So we are in that space. I would urge, and on behalf of the committee, if maybe the documents have been sent, we receive them, we put them aside, our apologies. But we will resend it. I will take it upon myself that by the end of today, Monday, ensure that the staff is always ensure that now we that information that we needed. But thank you very much. Life is served. Unfortunately, Doc, we're not going to be. If there is something that you want to check, you can check with them or you can put that on writing. Because in the next 10 minutes, we are going to get another presentation from the minister. Life, lunch is served. We'll have 15. It depends if the minister is outside. Oh, okay. I've been sensitized that they have been told that they must not come yet, so our lunch will be 30 minutes so that we are able to come early. Yeah. Thank you very much, honorable members.